guys, and you are listening to the Chris Gilbertson Show, where we focus on the secrets of the extraordinarily successful. And I am just so privileged and excited for our next guest that is coming on the show. His name is Howard Berg, and Howard is considered the world's fastest reader. Literally, his claim, he was published in 1990 in the Guinness Book of World Records, and no one else has ever had a reading claim published just like Howard. So for the past 30 years, he's been teaching people how to increase their reading speed, but more importantly, how to develop a total learning solution in their life. So his work, he's been featured on over 1,100 radio and television programs, and you may have seen him with Justin Timberlake, with Peyton Manning at Sony's e-reader spokesperson, and he's reading over 500-page healthcare bill on Cuvado in just 50 minutes, and then he's also performed a complete analysis, and his Time Warner book, Super Reading Secrets, is in its 28th reprint edition, and he's been requested to write Speed Reading the Easy Way for students, and so he's got over 650,000 copies that have been sold of his mega speed reading program as well. So he is completely accomplished, and I am just so excited to bring him on the call. So Howard, welcome. How are you doing today?
I'm great, but it's actually a 1,500-page bill.
Oh, what did I say?
500.
Oh, well, yes, that's completely different. Absolutely. We do not want to mess that up. A little bit faster. You read a little faster there. Well, this is just amazing. I think it's just an incredible talent and just something that is so beneficial for people. So how did you get started in this?
I grew up in Brooklyn. You may have noticed I have a bit of a Brooklyn accent. And the area I grew up in was where the movie Goodfellas was filmed. Not the nicest neighborhood. It was in the projects. And the safest place in my neighborhood was the library. I discovered at a very early age, gang kids don't go to libraries. I think that's still true. I don't think anyone here has ever gone to a library and said, we better leave, the gang kids are coming. I think pretty much the same can be said for bookstores, but even more libraries. So as a child, I spent a lot of time reading because anything else was very, very dangerous. And when I got to college, I was already reading around 3,000 words a minute. I had college-level reading in sixth grade. When I got to college, I majored in biology, got very interested in the brain in my junior year. And I only had 1 year of college left. I decided I was going to do a four-year psych program in my senior year and finish the bio program at the same time. And the dean said, that's not going to be possible. You'll have to take six science courses a term. And frankly, you're not smart enough. And that's when it hit me. They don't teach us how to learn in school. They tell us what to learn, why to learn, and what will happen when we don't learn. But they don't tell you why you can listen to a song on the radio for seconds, sing every word perfectly after hearing it once, maybe twice. And then you read a book that matters for work or school. And after you put it down, after reading it for hours, you're lucky if you know the name of the book and who wrote it 15 minutes later. There's got to be a way to learn things that have relevance to our lives, the way we learn song lyrics that barely matter. It turned out there was, and I went from 3,000 to 25,000 words a minute, about 80 pages, and I was able to get a four-year psych program done in a year. Then I did a graduate course in educational psych in 7 hours for the five-month course. I took the AP test in 50 minutes. It was a six-hour test. Got a B+. So in less than 8 hours, for $65, I got four graduate credits with a B+. And I wondered if what I was doing was a transferable skill, or was it just something I could do? And we started a school. We had a 19-year-old pass the bar in California. We had another one graduate UTA in Texas with a 4.0 at 16. And his degree was in economics. He had his master's degree in math at 19 with a 3.97 GPA. And another one did his four-year college degree in 6 months and went to China, learned Chinese in 3 weeks, and became a missionary. So there's no question this is something people can learn and use. And what we'll do today is not just talk about what I've done, but share with people how to get started and give them specific strategies they can begin to use, not just for themselves, but if you have any kids in your family, students, children, nieces, nephews, people you like have kids, you want to give this to them too. So take some notes if you can.
Absolutely. This is just phenomenal. It's just so incredible. Now, you explained to me that you can increase the learning rate by an average individual by 100% in 4 hours. And, you know,
Correct.
How do you start doing that? How does that work?
Well, first I want to say we actually did a double-blind efficacy study with an independent research firm where they took just the program without me in the room. In fact, I wasn't in the same city when it was done. And the average person in the study was able to go 100% faster with excellent comprehension in 4 hours. So it's not just a statement. It's actually scientifically validated. But to answer your other question, how do you get started? Let's begin at the beginning, which is why do we read slowly? And then we'll just, 'cause then we could explain how to fix the problem. Once we have a concept of what's causing the problem, I can show you the solution to the problem with better clarity because you know what it is you're solving. And when you think about it, driving in a car, you read the road. And unlike a book, you read in four directions, front, back, left, and right. And you watch your gauges, and you watch the gas, and you watch the road signs, and you watch your directions. You look out for people or anything walking on the road or moving on the road, like animals. And it's so boring. You turn on the radio, you talk to your friends, and in some places you talk on the phone. And unfortunately, a lot of people do all that at the same time. And they're still bored. You go in a book at about 200 words a minute. That's the mode, the most frequently seen reading speed in a large group. And you read in one direction. But talking on the cell phone and doing all those other tasks at 70 miles an hour in four directions, easier. Why? And this is going to provide the answer to your question. When we're in a car, all the data, all the information is processed as if we're watching a movie. And we see all the information very clearly in our mind as a movie, as pictures. When we read a book, it's quite different. It seems like someone is in the back of our head pronouncing one word at a time. So we're literally hearing a book with our eyes. And there's the problem. The average person speaks about 200 words a minute, and by no coincidence, the average person reads about 200 words a minute. We read about the same speed as that little voice in our head can speak aloud. By teaching people how to see the movie in the book, they're seeing throughout everything else they do in the day, their speed can go up 100%. And it actually takes 2.5 hours to go up in speed. The other 90 minutes is on comprehension and retention. But the speeding part is really only 2.5 hours. And that's the first step, learning how to make that movie.
Wow, that phenomenal explanation. That makes so much sense. Now, one of the strategies that you teach is using your hands when you speed read. How does that assist in the process?
Completely right. And that is the first step. And I'm going to give very specific instructions now. And I'd like people to please take notes. And here's what I'm going to have you do after you've listened to this show. Find a book, preferably a nonfiction book. They have more structure. Fiction is designed to confuse you. If you know the ending, it's not very interesting. Nonfiction is designed to inform you. If you don't know where it's going, you're not learning anything. So nonfiction is better for practice. Pick a book you've read already. The only reason you wouldn't understand the book you read and understood already is you're reading too quickly, not because the book was too difficult. So that's very important because sometimes people will pick a book like a calculus book. I had that happen on one occasion, or a chemistry book, and they know no math and no science. Well, most people reading those books slowly would find them confusing. So we want to make sure the only possible variable that can cause confusion is your speed, not the content. So what you're going to do now is get a timer, and I think most people have them, if not on a watch, certainly in their phones, and you're going to set a timer for 1 minute. And for 1 minute, just read the way you read right now, and have a little pencil ready. And when you're done reading for a minute, just take the pencil and put a little line in the margin where you finished. And now you know how far you can go in a minute. And now you're going to learn how to go further. After you've done this initial test, here's what you're going to do to speed up. And then we'll test ourselves again. You were correct. You use your hand. The hand helps to keep the eye engaged more like a camera and less like an ear. Preferably use your right hand and move it from the left to the right margin one line at a time. And as you're moving your hand completely, and this is important, completely across the page, not down the center, you'll be able to move at a much more visual rate. Don't go faster than you can comprehend. Don't go slower than you can comprehend. Go as fast as you can comprehend. And what you'll find is you go about 10 to 15% faster. And here's how we can prove it. After you're done practicing this for about 5 minutes, go back to where you initially began reading. And what you, are you there?
Yep. Can you hear
Hello?
Me?
Hello? Yeah, there was a noise on my phone. I wasn't sure if I had lost contact. Sometimes that'll happen. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't talking to myself.
No, we're still here.
Terrific. That's
really
great.
Listening.
Okay, wonderful. It's happened. I mean, I've been on shows where it got disconnected, and I'm talking for 10 minutes, and I'm like,
oh, no.
That was a great interview. I really enjoyed listening to me. I was fascinating.
Oh, too funny.
So I was actually on Comedy Central 9 times. We'll talk
no
about
way.
That later. Yeah, I was Jon Stewart's first guest, and I was with Dennis Leary 7 times. And then
oh,
Jon
wow.
had me on a segment. So what you want to do is go back to the book, exactly where you started. This time, time yourself for a minute and use your hand. Now, this is the important part. Don't go faster or slower than you can understand. If you know what you're reading, see if you can go a little quicker and still understand. When you can't, you've reached the ceiling. So slow down back to a speed where you begin to understand again so you know what your maximum speed is. And as you're moving your hand from the left to the right margin and your eyes are following as quickly as you understand, for 1 minute, you'll be amazed when you look at where you finished the second time. You'll be about 10, 15% further along than you were in your initial test. In fact, I've actually put this on a video where people can see this. It's a free speed reading lesson. It's called freespeedreadinglesson.com. And I made a video out of this so people could see how the hands move and really, you know, get a more visual, because it's very visual. And so if they go to freespeedreadinglesson.com after the show, they could see exactly what I'm explaining visually. It'll make it easier for them to learn.
Oh,
and that will miss, and that's the first step in speeding up. And it takes about 2.5 more hours to go 100%, but that's a very good first step, and it only takes a couple of minutes to implement.
Outstanding. Now, for the so one of my questions that I think I want to come back to, but first is, I mean, do you think this is really the solution for learning, like ultimately just learning how to read faster and comprehend faster?
No, and that's a big problem in our companies and in our schools. You know, right now there's a 40% dropout rate in high school, 50%
wow.
in four-year college, and 70% in two-year college. And the average person finishing school takes 6 years to do 4 years, and they said it's going to take 8 in the next few years. So consider that the tuition will double, and at $20,000, $30,000 a year, that's not a small amount of money. Here's the problem. If you ask a normal person, did you study, they'll say, and they did, they'll say yes. And you say, how do you know? Well, I read for 4 hours, or I studied 500 pages. No, it doesn't matter how many hours you read, and it doesn't matter how many pages you looked at. The real measurement is, what did you learn? I mentioned earlier, I did a five-month course in educational psychology at the graduate level in 7 hours. I got a B+. Did it matter how many hours I studied? No. Did it matter how many pages I read? No. What mattered is I got 4 graduate credits in less than 8 hours with a B+. And so people are looking at the wrong information when they're reading. They think reading is learning. It's not. It's the most important step. Think of a Swiss Army knife. It has a very big blade, but lots of little tools. Those tools have a function. They're important, or else they wouldn't be in the blades. But the reading blade is the most important. So I think of reading as input, taking information someone else has and inputting it into your brain. But here's where the problems begin. Let's take an extreme example. You're reading a calculus book. You read every page. You memorized all the equations. And then you got an F. And it's like, how did I get an F? I studied for 10 hours. I learned all the equations. And they drop out of school because it didn't work. Well, the problem is they didn't learn calculus. They memorized a lot of equations but didn't understand how to use them. So when someone actually gave them a problem that required them to integrate the information they learned into a solution, they had no clue where to start or where to begin. That wasn't what they did. They memorized a lot of facts without knowing the meaning and significance of the facts that they learned. And that's why reading by itself will not completely fix your problem. I've created an entire learning system that does, where it includes reading and studying and memory and test-taking strategies and a number of other tools, which collectively are the Swiss Army knife. So now when you're reading something, you're not just memorizing a lot of facts. You're understanding the meaning and significance of those facts, what they do and how they work, and how to apply them in a real-life situation to solve a problem. And when you think about it, that isn't what our schools do. They basically memorize a lot of facts and names and formula without understanding why they even have to know it. How many people have gone through that experience? Why do we need to learn this? Because. And that's it. That's about as much. If you even give you that much, it's because. You need to. It's required. And that's not a reason. And so our brains are like, I don't want to learn this. I don't see any purpose to this. This is wasting my time is valuable. This is wasting my valuable time. And they're actually right because they don't see a purpose. There is no reason to learn it. So that's one of my secrets, by the way. The first thing you want to do to go from reading to learning is have a purpose. May I do an experiment to show how important that is?
Absolutely.
You know, when Christmas comes, many people go to the mall, and there's a lot of people there, a lot. Most of the people, you have no idea who they are. And
right.
As you're walking around shopping, you don't say, hey, I don't know them, I don't know them, I don't know them. And then what happens? You see someone you do know, a friend, a relative, a coworker, a neighbor, and from the tens of thousands or even more faces mulling around in the shopping mall, the familiar face stands out. What happened? Your unconscious brain has looked at everything, all the faces, and only when a familiar face appeared that has relevancy in your life did your conscious brain get alerted. Look, mom. Look, there's your girlfriend. Look, there's your boyfriend. Look, there's your coworker. In order to have spotted that familiar face, you had to also spot all the non-familiar faces, but no conscious action was needed till something relevant happened. We're going to do an experiment now to show how that works in learning. What I'd like everyone listening to do is look around in the room you're in and look for everything colored blue. Make a mental movie, a picture of everything around you colored blue. And now that you've done that, I only need you to do this for a moment. I want you to close your eyes. And with your eyes closed, I want you to remember everything you just looked at that was colored red. Immediately brain says, that's not fair. You said blue. Exactly. Open your eyes and look what happened. Blue things got bigger and brighter and louder. And everything else, including red, got dimmer and lower and further away. And when we have a purpose, just like the faces that are relevant pop out from the tens of thousands of unfamiliar faces that have no significance, even at very high speed, that same part of the brain that can spot what matters is spotting the information in your book that you need to pay attention to because you made that a priority. It looks for it at a much higher rate than your conscious brain can possibly use. As a result, even though you're reading very quickly, things that have significance and relevance stand out as if they were bolded on the page. And that's exactly what's going to happen. And so that's why a purpose is critical to not just read, but to understand and learn.
That is just phenomenal. Now, you talk about three levels of learning, and since a lot of this applies all to productivity and, you know, encompassing learning and understanding, how does that, you know, can you explain those three levels of learning and how that can help increase productivity for people?
Yes, and I'll even do a little metaphor that'll make the explanation pop out as completely meaningful.
The first level is called literal. It's actually the words you see on the page. It's literal. And the second level is called implied, and that's the information that you're expected to understand without being given extra help, like look at the red hat. You know what red is. You know what looking is. You know what a hat is. You don't have to be explained all the meaning. Third level is inferential. That's actually knowing how to use the information when you need to use it. And the way we teach this in my schools, we talk about a dime. So if you have a dime handy, pull it out. If you don't, just try to picture a dime in your imagination. So, Chris, tell me, what does a dime look like? Just what do you think when you think of a dime? What do you see?
Silver, round.
Oops. Yes, yes. That's fine. Silver, round, has ridges, got some guy's face on it. That's literal learning. See, how interesting
right.
was that?
How
interesting,
not that interesting
did you find that? Is that? No, and that's about how most learning is for kids in school and adults at work. You're just given stuff to read. It's like, why don't you know it? Just do it. I don't need to tell you why. Just do it. And your brain's like, I don't want to learn this. Why do I care? It's a dime. It's silver. It's round. It's flat. Who cares? And that's why a lot of people don't learn. They put the time in. They put the work in, but nothing gets done. Second level of a dime. Tell me something you could do with a dime other than use it as money. I'll get you started. You can use a dime to flip. You could flip a dime. What else could you do with a dime?
You can use it to unscrew something.
Yes.
You can what else can you do with it?
You could spin it.
Yep.
You can use it to mark a golf ball. Notice what we've done. You had to think this time. Did you see how your brain actually shifted from trying to visually imagine a dime to thinking, what have I ever done with a dime? What have I ever seen done with a dime? Or what might I use a dime for I never thought about before? Did you
right.
see how your brain actually was thinking at a different level? That was the implied level. Now, I'm going to actually tell you this very, very interesting story about the dime. Do you know who's on the dime? Most people don't.
I don't, actually.
Roosevelt's on the dime, and I'm going to tell you why he's on the dime. Roosevelt had polio, and at the time he had polio, about 13% of all the people in the country had polio. Many of them were children. 1 in 8 children had polio. There was no cure. So he started a national foundation for infantile paralysis to find a cure. And he tried to raise money by running birthday parties on his birthday around the country. But even though the president was doing this, they just didn't make enough money. There was a very famous entertainer back then. His name was Eddie Cantor. Some people a little older might recognize the name, but I doubt if the younger people will. He's sort of like the Justin Timberlake of his time. And Eddie Cantor had a national radio show, which, think of American Idol. It was big. Back then, radio was television. And on his national show, he said, send your pocket change to the White House. He had lots of very influential, famous friends at the time, like George Burns, very famous comedian. And they, on their radio shows, said the same thing, send your pocket change to the president. Well, over 600,000 dimes flooded the White House. And Eddie Cantor coined the phrase March of Dimes to Washington because there was a March of Dimes thanks to their shows. And they used these dimes, used this money to find the cure for polio. So when Congress was going to change the mercury dime into another figure, who better than Roosevelt? The March of Dimes, it helped to find a cure for polio, and that's why Roosevelt's picture is on every dime. Now,
wow.
I asked you, tell me something about a dime. Tell me something about a dime, Chris. Based on what you now know.
That I now know? Well, Roosevelt is
yeah.
on the dime because
yeah. Yeah.
of having polio and for the research in March of the Dime for presenting, you know, a solution to find a cure for it.
Absolutely. Now, was that Lawrence Dignan at Silver and Round and Little?
Say that again?
Was that more interesting in its little and its silver and its round?
Absolutely.
Notice you didn't take any notes. And yet,
yep.
If I gave you a sheet of paper right now, I bet you could write an entire page, possibly two pages, about a dime. We didn't use any memory tricks. We did nothing special. What we did is, this is important. We made it interesting. We made it meaningful. We made
right.
it significant. And when those three things happen, notice what takes place. Learning. Inferential. And now you understand the meaning and significance of a dime. Who would have thought there was anything to a dime? It's just a little tiny, practically can't buy a piece of gum with it anymore. And yet, look at the story. And that's the inferential level of learning, where we go past looking at it, observing it, to understanding there's a reason and purpose behind it. And when you learn anything at that level, you walk away with knowledge and the ability to accomplish something in your life instead of just a lot of meaningless, memorized facts that you can only retain for a short time and quickly forget. In fact, you'll never forget this story,
yep.
even though you only heard it once, because it had such meaning and significance in your life. And that's how learning should be. And that's why we don't just teach reading, we teach learning. And you can see that when learning is properly taught, it's easier to learn and retain and apply information. And that's what people need to be doing at work, school, and home. In a knowledge-based economy, there are 15 million Americans out of work. And we had a group of kids, 11 through 15, start a company to raise money. The Downs Research, and in their first year of business, your children made $93,000, and they
wow.
won the Silver Pyramid, which is the Oscar in advertising, not for kids, but for the best not-for-profit business in America. So if an 11-year-old, using a knowledge tool, was able to learn enough to start a business and run it effectively enough to make $93,000 and win the Academy Award, and advertising, why is anyone out of work in this country? Because they don't have the same tools these children had. And that's why I'm such a zealot about presenting this, because I know that what we're doing can help give people back hope and give them back their lives. People don't need jobs. They need to learn how to build their own companies and be self-reliant so that no one can fire them and no one can replace them. When you're the boss, no one fires you. But nobody realizes how easy that is to do if they don't know how to learn. It seems overwhelming. But let's face it, if 11-year-olds can do this, how overwhelming could it be? Were they smart? Absolutely. Did they work hard? Definitely. But you know what? It's a lot harder to be out of work and on the verge of losing your home and watching your family starving than it is to learn how to learn and be in a position to take.
Well, that story is just so phenomenal for an 11-year-old to build a company. And, you know, I would love to pick your brain on what are the five things you must learn to master material to do that.
That's a great question, because I think a lot of people are overwhelmed by how much content there is in many of the things they have to learn. They don't know where to begin. And in many cases,
right.
that keeps them from even starting. And it's just five things you actually need to learn. And if you learn just those five things, you'll master any subject. And those five things are the vocabulary. 80% of learning a new subject is learning the words. And how do you know what words to learn? They're usually bolded, italic. They're in a strange font, underlined. Or they might even be in a table that says vocabulary or glossary. That's a pretty easy way to locate the words. The second thing you look for are names, people. If there's someone in your text, why are they there? What did they do? The third thing you're looking for, anything dealing with a number, it could be a number, a date, a statistic, a formula, anything that has a number attached to it is usually relevant. Focus on that. And the fourth thing you want to look for is the headings. The headings in each nonfiction book act a lot like a file folder label. Everything within a heading section has a common theme. Like if it says ear and the next heading is eye, everything related to the ear is under ear, and everything related to the eye is under eye. And that's just a an example of what a heading does. It collects data under a theme. And what your goal is to find what are the five most important concepts that are disclosed in that section. The five most important concepts. And the last thing you're looking for are the questions and the answers. So if you know every word, every name, and what they did, every important number, date, statistic, and formula, and why it's there and how to use it, the four to five most important concepts covered in every section, answered every question, you are going to be a genius. In fact, we took another group of 11 to 15-year-olds, not the one I talked about earlier. We gave them a 30-chapter book and a sophomore college text on lifelong developmental psychology. They had 1 week. They read the book. They created a learning table. And in 1 week, they were able to, 15 of the students out of 18 students passed the CLEP exam, which is an AP test, and got credit. So you're 11 years old, and you finished a sophomore college course in 1 week, a 30-chapter book, and passed the AP test. And again, children aren't necessarily smarter than the people listening. They just have a better system for doing it. And we talked about earlier, that's why it's not just about reading. We teach them how to read, but then we teach them what to look for and how to remember it and how to collect the data. And that's why people are being so successful when they use the totally integrated system. And they, again, can get started with a free speed reading lesson at freespeedreadinglesson.com. And I do believe this is just, I just started doing this week. We're allowing people to try the entire four-hour reading program online for $9.97, not a piece of it, the whole program. What we're going to do is let them double their speed first, so they actually get the benefit and then pay for it. So I think if you give people what you promise, they actually experience it, see that it worked, then they should pay for it. And the reason we charge $9.97 is my experience was if people don't pay anything, they don't do anything. They have no invested interest in it. And $9.97 is a very low amount, but it still gives you a reason to do something. And many people without a reason to take action won't do anything. So even though it's a small amount, it's enough to get people to – it's only a four-hour class. They have a week, and they get to keep it for a year, but they have a week to test it. And I think that it's fair for me to take the risk, let them use it, find out it works, and then pay for it. And as a result, they'll also get some advanced lessons afterwards and some other material that will help them take their learning to the next level. But that's a great way to get started, freespeedreadinglesson.com.
Excellent. That's outstanding.
That's the first lesson.
Perfect. Now, just a quick question, because a lot of knowledge now and information, you talked about it, you know, we're in the information age right now. A lot of it's through, like, YouTube and through,
yes.
programs and things online.
Yes.
Will a lot of that, what you teach, help people comprehend that learning environment as well?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, you're correct. More and more, we're moving away from printed material more to electronic media. I think it's just a matter of time till printed books will become like record albums were. They just don't exist
right.
anymore.
Right.
And you can see that. It's happening so quickly that publishers don't know what to do because the whole industry is collapsing.
Right.
The way I teach people how to use the cursor on a computer screen as a hand, and I teach them how to use their hand on a pad screen, because you can literally touch a pad screen and manipulate the material pretty much the way you can paper, just that it's electrons and not paper. But so that way, whether they're watching it on a large screen on a computer or they're using a pad, which many people are using, and in some cases it's something like a Sony e-reader or a Kindle
right.
or anything along those lines. There are a number of those devices, the Nook. They're able to do it. And, yes, I do cover that.
That's outstanding. Now, one thing you mentioned that I thought was really interesting is, you know, people get overwhelmed, and it's so true. I mean, I've been there myself where it's just information overload. You're overwhelmed, and it's like you just stop. You don't do anything. So I'm curious, what role does emotional intelligence, or EQ, play in the success of your learning process?
That's a very important question. It's actually the single most important determinant of your success in life. I'll give an example. Have you ever met anyone who's very intelligent, but they had very poor social skills, or they were arrogant or antagonistic, and people couldn't work with them? They lost their job. Or somebody, how many people listening have ever gotten nervous taking an exam? And let's include road tests for your license. How many people have gotten tired? You know, taking an entire SAT test, especially some of your kids, you know, 2-3 hours into the test, what they're thinking is, I'm bored, I want to go home now. And they just fill in the bubbles. And you know how much money that's going to cost the parent? Because they were bored, they couldn't sit another hour. Happens all the time. Many of us experience it in a meeting or driving in traffic. I'm going to show you how to actually change an emotional state, get more energy. And I'd like the people listening, if you don't mind, please stand up, because this is actually going to work only if you're standing. And I'm going to show you a little technique you can use. We know the left brain controls the right side of the body, and the right brain controls the left. I'd like you to touch your left hand to your right shoulder, then your right hand to your left, sort of like a Macarena without music. And when you're done, I'm going to do this again, but this time touch your left hand to your right knee and your right hand to your left knee alternately. And you'll notice immediately as you're doing this, you have to think a little more when you're doing the knees because both sides of the brain are engaging. Now make a fist with your right hand, with your thumb and your fist, put it over your head and say, I feel great, yes, with passion, like you mean it. The sincerity is important. And pull your hand down to your right side as you go, yes. We're going to do 3 sets of these. And when you're done, I'm going to show you how you can use this to get instant energy at an important meeting during a lengthy exam or even when driving in traffic and you're tired. So let's begin with the shoulder taps first. Follow at my speed. Ready? Begin. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Now we're going to do knee taps. Follow my speed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Make a fist. I feel great. Yes. Now what we're going to do. Oh, are you there?
Yep.
Oh, I just got a text from you saying we got cut off. That's why I wasn't sure.
Oh, no. Oh, that's weird. Yeah,
I was like, it's very strange. I'm like, oh, my goodness, not again.
No.
Okay, let's continue. We're going to do
live,
the shoulder taps. That's funny. That's funny. So I got your text that we weren't live now when we are live. We're going to do the shoulder taps now a little quicker. Ready? Begin. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 8. We're going to do the knee taps. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Make a fist. I feel great. Yes. Last time, sprinting all out, starting with the shoulder taps. Ready? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Knees. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Fist. I feel great. Yes. Give yourselves a big hand. Sit down. Feel great. And I'm going to tell you what you learned. You know what happens when you do this 3 times? Nothing. Remember Pavlov? He rang a bell, he fed a dog. He rang a bell, he fed a dog. Eventually, he rang a bell and the dog drooled. You don't want to drool. But you do want more energy at work, at an important meeting, during a lengthy exam, driving in a car in traffic and you're tired. And you can't do this exercise in public. It looks foolish. But if you do it every day, 3 times a day for a month or two, and then when you need extra energy, you squeeze your thumb and say to yourself, I feel great, yes. What do you think you'll feel? Great. You've conditioned that state you're in at the end of this drill with more energy after stimulating both sides of your brain separately, together, and quicker and quicker. It created energy, and when the energy peaked, you went, I feel great, yes. Eventually, squeezing the thumb and saying, I feel great, yes, will become the stimulus for state. And you can create the state. In the same way, we can teach people to create the state of relaxation or focus or creativity. And then when they need to switch it on, they can trigger a stimulus that is going to create the state. And these emotional states, properly used, can make the difference between success and failure. I'll give you one very good example from my life. I taught swimming when I was younger for 18 years, not so much for money, but as a volunteer, I enjoyed helping people. And I was a lifeguard in many, many places. I was the director, but this particular day, I was just swimming laps at a beach club I belonged to. And there was a drowning in the family pool, which I wasn't in, so I didn't interfere. It wasn't my pool. You don't get involved in another person's pool. You could cause a problem. They have their own system. When I was swimming in the adult pool, and it was only me and one person, and I noticed as I was doing my laps, the person that was in the pool with me was floating face down for a very long time. So I went over to him, and I tapped him on the shoulder to see if he was okay, and he didn't respond. So I shook him hard, and he didn't respond. I turned him over. He was dead. Now, everything changed. I'm swimming laps. I'm not the lifeguard. This isn't my job. But now it's my job because everybody who could help this man was at the other pool, except for me and one kid who was unaware. I don't know how that happened. Two people in a pool, one's floating face down for 3 or 4 minutes, and he doesn't notice it. Great lifeguard. So I said, you got to come in and help me. This guy's dead. We got to get him out. So we take him out of the pool. We pull him to the side, and we have to do CPR. That's his only chance. He's dead. So I said, you do the breathing, I'll do the compressions, because I know that 99% of the time a drowning victim will throw up when you do mouth-to-mouth. And I wasn't getting paid. I was going to help, but I wasn't going to have that happen. And I said, you're getting paid. You do that. I'll do the compressions. And he said, just do it. This guy's going to be dead if we don't. He's dead now. The only hope he has is us. And we did the compressions, and we brought him back. He started breathing. We got his heart pumping. When the ambulance came, he was alive. Now, here's an example. How many people would have seen something like that? Remember, I was swimming laps. I was in a relaxed state. I wasn't working. I was there to have fun. And in an instant, I had to make a decision that could kill a person or save his life. If I was in an emotional state, oh, my God, what do I do? The man's dead. Oh, my God, what do I do? I had to remember every detail of CPR precisely at that moment that I hadn't studied in over a year. Emotions need to be controlled in business and in life for us to be successful. And all too often, our emotional states disrupt our success. And so that's why emotional intelligence is so critical. And we talk about it and teach strategies like the one I taught earlier so that people can create the states that will help them be successful. In fact, if you're listening and you have a business, what emotional states does your client need to be in to be successful? What states are interfering with that success, and what are you doing about it? And I bet you 99.99% of the people listening will say, I didn't even know I had to do anything and there was anything I could do. And yet a lot of the returns and dissatisfaction they're experiencing in their businesses is because people are having these problems and nothing was done. And by teaching people how to handle these problems and address them, they make more money, they have fewer returns, they have more references and referrals, and they make a success out of their lives and businesses. So this is not a small thing. This is a very, very serious problem. Nobody even realizes it exists.
Right. Now, do you have products that help in that, in the EQ realm
yes.
as well?
Absolutely. And you'll find that the reading program itself has got a lot in it, and my full learning system has even more, especially the advanced material that they get. And the advanced material, I deal with very specific states and how to create them and what they do and how they work. I try not to overwhelm people. You go one step at a time. And
right.
if you take enough steps, you can absorb enormous amounts of useful data. If you give them a fire hose, they don't learn anything. And that's
right.
why I set up the advanced program so I could stream critical information at a rate that their brains will be comfortable learning and be able to use it instead of feel overwhelmed by too much too quickly. It's very important not just to teach information but to make it manageable and learnable. And that's why I've had so much success with my program. In fact, this is something most people don't do. I give out my cell phone when someone gets my program. I give them my cell phone. I tell them, call me if you need help. I don't know many people at my level of instruction that do that. You know, I started
None.
In teaching.
I don't know. I know maybe you and one other person. That's
I
phenomenal.
I do for a reason. I started as a teacher, and I'm still partly teacher. I'm not just about selling. It's about helping people. And
right.
I thought as a teacher, your job is to teach. If someone gets your method of doing something, you're supposed to help them learn it. And if you're not prepared to stand behind it and help them, why are you doing it? It shouldn't just be about making money. It should be about making a difference. So I do I give 100%, and I think that's why I have such a loyal following, because they know that I'm interested in them and their success and not just in having them buy stuff for me. They buy stuff for me because I help them, not because I'm selling them.
Mm-hmm. And I just love your idea, too, of how they learn it, and you're giving them at the right pace, and it's not just overload, because that's what a lot of programs are out there today. So that is just incredible. I love that. Now, I'd love to ask you, before we kind of wrap up the call here, what causes creative block, and do you have techniques to help people overcome that as well?
Yes. Well, let me be more specific.
Yes, please do.
By the way, humor is very important in teaching. When you're happy and having fun, your brain enjoys what it's doing, it will remember. When your
right.
brain is in pain and unhappy, it will delete. So I make it very, very important in all my programs that people are having fun. So what they learn is memorable. What causes writer's block is two things. First, the normal way we express our ideas is by talking. But when we write, we use our hands. Now, 90% of high school graduates cannot write a paragraph. That's a fact. If writing was an easy thing to do, 90% would be writing and 10% wouldn't. So what we know is writing isn't a natural occurrence. And one of the reasons is instead of expressing your ideas through your mouth, you're using your hands, whether you're using a keyboard or a pen. And making the switch from your mouth to your hands creates some inertia, and that alone can cause a block. Once you get started, the phone rings and you're talking and still writing. Watching TV is still writing. So a big part of the initial problem is getting started, which we cover very clearly in my full writing program. The second thing we do is we look at the two parts of the brain. The left brain predominantly edits. It deals with spelling and grammar and style, agreement. The right brain primarily creates. The problem is most people try to write and edit simultaneously, and I think you've experienced this.
Yeah.
You write 10
absolutely.
Lines, you look at it, and you're like, ugh, I can't use this. This is no good. And you cross it out. You do it again and again and again and again and again, and finally hours later, it's like, I got nothing done. I'm going. Here's the solution. It's very simple. Create a really good outline, which is a left brain activity, and then use your right brain to fill in the outline, and don't do any editing. Ignore the spelling, the grammar, the agreement, the style. No matter how bad it is, let it go. And after you've done completing a rough draft, which is pretty crappy, by the way, you go back, and now you let your left brain go to town, and you refine it and edit it. It actually takes less time by alternating the editing with the creativity instead of simultaneously doing both. You'll find that you're able to accomplish far more in less time, more consistently, so you can get your writing done on time all the time. It's really easy. And the first step in the whole system is the reading program, and I'm giving a free lesson at freespeedreadinglesson.com, and then they have the opportunity to try the whole system for just $9.97. That's the entire reading program for a week. They'll double in 4 hours, and then they pay for it after they've learned it, which I think is fair. And I'll also have they'll have the opportunity to get all the programs after they get the reading program, the writing, the memory, all the other things we discussed are all available, but I like to start with something simple that's easy to do and demonstrable, and I'm taking all the risk. I'm trusting that people will be so delighted with the results that they get. They're also going to get a 2-month membership in my advanced learning club. The first 2 months, they're going to get one advanced lesson a month. They're going to get a webinar every month with me on how to be more successful, in a DVD and a newsletter, and so they will be paying out the reading program for 2 months, and then the third month, if they decide to stay in the advanced learning system, they have that option. If not, they can quit. And it's pretty simple. I'm going to help them become more successful. I'm going to help their kids do better in school, and I'm willing to take all the risk and prove that I can do this by letting them try everything. up front and then pay for it after they got the benefit.
Oh, I love it. That is just outstanding. And just before we wrap up here, is there any other tips or advice you can share to help people retain more information?
Let me think. Well, one fast one, it's actually a nutritional tip. You know, eating pancakes and eggs is not eating eggs and pancakes. Whichever food group you eat first is going to affect your learning state. If you eat carbohydrates first, you'll be sluggish and slow and tired after you're done with the meal. If you eat the protein first, the meat or the eggs or whatever the protein is in your meal first, you'll stay alert after a meal. And the reason a lot of people get tired in the afternoon, about an hour and a half after lunch, is because they ate the chips or the fries or the soda, which is very high in carbs, before they ate any protein. And as a result, they sabotaged their entire afternoon. It doesn't take much. Just have the protein first. Maybe drink a glass of milk before you eat any carbohydrates. So the first thing your brain gets is protein. And if you do that, you'll find you're able to accomplish far more. That's an easy thing to do. Just make a little bit of a change.
No, that's awesome advice. Because, I mean, I know that definitely works, so I do that. And that's incredible. So I'm just so excited. And thank you for coming on our call and dealing with all the technical difficulties we had this morning. But you had awesome advice. I'm just so excited for the information that you share and you help people. And where can people find out more about you, Howard?
They can go to freespeedreadinglesson.com. That's freespeedreadinglesson.com. It's a free speed reading lesson, I think the name. And then they have the opportunity. They have the opportunity to get the full reading program. They can try it for a week. It's a full year. They can try it for a week for $9.97, and after they've seen it works, they'll pay for it. And I think that's very fair. I'll take all the risk. And I'll trust them that if I can double their learning ability for the rest of their lives, that no one's going to complain about paying for something that has such a profound influence on their life. And I'll even throw in 2 free months of my advanced training. So I know I can double them in 4 hours, but I also know that I can do a lot better if you give me a little bit of time and space it out once a month rather than trying to do it in just a few short hours. We can accomplish far more. And I'm willing to even take the risk there. I'll do the first 2 months free.
Wow. Outstanding. Thank you so much for doing that. So, again, this is Chris, and you're just listening to the Howard Berg interview, and this is the Chris Gilbertson Show, where we focus on the secrets of the extraordinarily successful. And, Howard, thank you so much for coming on the show. Phenomenal insight and tips and strategies to help you as an entrepreneur excel and also to help your children and your families excel in their learning comprehension. And so if you want to learn more about Howard as well and all of his programs, head over to chrisgilbertson.com. I'll have a full profile on him, all of the information on Howard, the interview, and all of his classes and information. So, again, thank you so much, Howard. And everyone, go out and take a great day.